First here, we'll have a meeting, okay?
Of course.
Here.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Let me just tell you first, list the things I would like to cover, even though very cursory some of them, this evening. Number one, the Catholic Catechist Writers Guild, to open the door to begin to organize the Catholic Catechist Writers Guild. Then number two, the Eucharistic Crusade, progress on that and our involvement. Then a report, I notice we've got a report on the rally for the Say Yes to Jesus in Kalamazoo. Number four is prayers for Peter Basic, who is Melian here?
Downstairs.
Well, as you probably know, the boy was cleared after one therapy. At any rate, the question now is whether he should continue with this therapy. Marian told me that her husband does not want it. She does. That's my advice. I thought the boy should be, well, here, yeah, whatever they call it, chemotherapy. But keep the boy in your prayers. Then, number five is I'm giving two talks next Sunday, one at the HLI, as you know, there's a meeting, Father Marx's assistant,
Father Habiger,
is having a program in Our Lady of Victory Church. I'm speaking at the 11 and 12:30 Masses, whatever homily there, on the Eucharist and the pro-life movement. Then, number six, from 2 o'clock on, I'm speaking at Louis Guardiola's place on the laity, is it?
The Reevangelization of America and the World.
Okay, so that'll be from 2 o'clock on, and there'll be question period, and then I think a discussion afterwards, right?
Yes, Father, question.
Then number eight is it a secretary for the Wednesday meetings. At least we've got one for tonight. Then number nine, a report on the number eight, in other words, for next time, at least a brief summary of what we'll have covered this week for next week's meeting. Then number ten, Carlos Sanchez is in Chicago April 8th, 9th, and 10th, and I will distribute the program. It's the annual convention of the Institute of Religious Life. Over the years, as you know, under directions of the OEC, a number of organizations have been started. This is one which has, for 20 years now, done a lot of good work in restoring sound religious communities among women. In any case, I got a fax from him, and as many of us as can meet him in Chicago, he would appreciate it, because he is really our Vatican superior, being in charge of catechetics. I have a program which I will distribute to all of you. Then, number 11, the Catholic Catechism newsletter, some progress on that. Number 12, our library for Detroit, where we stand, what the progress is. Number 13, bringing books back into print. Very much needed. Good Catholic books, as you know, that have been taken out of print. And number 14, a report on my own manuscript on the question and answer Catholic Catechism. That is, it's to be the way in which the catechism can be used, with the realm's backing, and ways in which that could be used by all of us. And then, number 15, the need for some kind of national, even international, reference service in connection with the organization that you know, Jerry, Trinity Communications, the
Jeffrey Myers. Myers?
Please?
Jeffrey Myers?
No.
Myers.
Please?
Jeffrey Myers?
Myers, yes. Jeff. No, Jeffrey Myers. He wants to work with us, and we should work with him. There's a three-man board. I happen to be one of the three members of the board of directors, and the purpose is to provide, well, using the computer, in this case, reference service, that should be developed. Okay. Now, number one, and that's why I asked our friend here to come for the Catholic Catechist Writers Guild. If you don't mind, what if I just go down these points, add a few more details, and then open it up, please. And do be prepared for input, and I want to be very clear and even outspoken. We do need input, active input, from all of you. Ideas, plans, and above all, your own commitments to what extent you can cooperate with any of these enterprises. Last night, Deleuze O'Connell called from Washington. Well, it's always she and John. I just called him up tonight to tell him I wouldn't be available by 9 o'clock, which I usually am tonight, because I'll be here till shortly after 8:30. I want to get back home. But she said, Father, would you please convince the people in Detroit that there's work to be done, and we've got some very dedicated people on the East Coast. Carol Egan putting in up to 60 hours a week. Just, you know, she transcribing, but in charge of two of our home study courses, both the Catechetics and the Master of the Spiritual Life. There are just hundreds of people writing in, for example, sending in their papers, questions, and so on. We need input. And as I think I've told you before, from whatever time of the meeting was, about a month ago, these meetings will not be catechetical sessions. Understand? These are work sessions for those who are willing to cooperate. Okay? So I have to then, if you don't mind, see a little more about each one, and then have an input from all of you. So, we are the Catholic Catechist Writers Guild. I would like to tonight press the button in organizing that guild. I think I told you I'd organized one for the Jesuits that I was teaching, and called the Jesuit Writers Guild. After our seminary was closed in Chicago, the guild folded up. And we organized another Catholic Writers Guild in New York. And the logic of it is, a number of people volunteer to contribute articles to Catholic periodicals. And now, I was in charge of that. Yeah, so were my own Jesuits. And to a certain extent, I'm still with the New York Guild, though there's too many other things that I'm involved with. I may have somebody then whom I would coach to work on this. And the way we've done it over the years is that I would write, first, get dedicated people who want to write. This is not a course in writer training, understand? You must be able to write. I don't mean necessarily professional, but able to write for a publication. And they agreed to do the work. Then what I would do, or have done, is write to a number of editors of magazines. And a personal letter describe what we were doing. And I asked them, would you be interested? You'll be guaranteed sound articles consistent with your editorial policy, the length, the readership level, and so on. They'll be carefully gone over, guaranteed publishable articles. then, and I'd ask them, first of all, are you interested? And if you are, about how many articles can you use in a given year? Would you be interested in a series of articles? Then they would write back. And I would stand behind, as I would in this case, to assure the editors that this would not be, in other words, just kind of a trial run or amateur. It would be done suitable for publication. Then we meet and get commitments from the members of the guild. And usually about, give them up to three, but better about 6 to 8 weeks from the time they commit themselves to writing an article to the time the article is finished. Then they'd be passed around, the manuscript would be passed around among the members of the guild. Not everybody, but at least a certain number of people would go over it, check, first of all, obviously, the grammar, but also does the article hold together, make recommendations, in effect, censor in the best sense, but a friendly censorship. And then the thing would come back, and then we'd have somebody do the typing, and then, of course, we'd have to meet the deadlines. We promised, for example, a series of, say, 7 articles in, well, in the magazine for certain months, or we better produce. And they have to usually be in there at least a month, usually 6 weeks before publication time. And all I can tell you is it was phenomenally successful. And with about 10 Jesuits, and when I worked with the Jesuits, and when we finished, that is when we had to close the guild because the seminary was closing, that year we had 85 articles published in national magazines, some big circulating magazines. So that's the general idea. Now, from those who were then scholastics, many have since published books. In other words, I can tell you, it does something to you once you get things published. And then, of course, your name is in print, which makes you marketable. And once you get a few things printed, you don't have to worry about getting publishers. It's usually the other way around. In any case, I've already been number one, start the Writers Guild today. Get some commitment and have a friend there to chaperone. Okay. Number two, Eucharistic Crusade. As I think I've already told you, this is what I've been told by my general to restore the United States. This is the apostleship of prayer for children from, say, 6 to about 17 or 18. The machinery is in motion. The important thing, of course, will be to get committed personnel that are willing to work together with a view to setting up the machinery for the United States. In order to get it going, we have to have Episcopal backing in the country. So I had an all-day meeting, it was a board meeting of this Institute on Religious Life that we're talking about last Friday in Chicago. I spent the day with Bishop Timlin. I think I mentioned him to you. Bishop James Timlin. You might keep the name in mind. T-I-M-L-I-N. Bishop Timlin, Bishop of Scranton, Pennsylvania, is Orthodox, has a good sense of humor, and even keeps the Jesuits in trim at Scranton University, which is no mean achievement. Now, Bishop Timlin agreed to be the Episcopal, you might say, liaison with the Society of Jesus to get bishops in different dioceses, as many dioceses as possible, to agree to have the Eucharistic Crusade established in the dioceses. Now, there's a good deal of literature behind it. I gave the bishop, well, some material, especially the norms for the Eucharistic Crusade and the handbook, both of which may have to be updated because the Eucharistic Crusade in the United States was dissolved about 1974 or 5 for more most obvious reasons. In any case, bishops are in charge. In other words, they have the authority. But the Society of Jesus provides the bishops with whatever they need for promoting this apostolate. In the day, about a year past, about 10 years in the United States, the Christian Crusade was among the young people, using the structure of the apostleship of prayer with a view to teaching the children, first of all, their faith catechetically, getting them devoted to the Blessed Sacrament, hence the word Eucharistic Crusade, and devotion to Our Lady. And we're having a meeting. Now, we might have a meeting in Chicago, and Bishop Tilney will be there too, in Chicago, the 8th, 9th, and 10th of April. And we met, Bishop Tilney and I met in Chicago before the board meeting, and the Eucharistic Crusade is the machinery is in motion. But let me tell you, it's one thing to have ideas, even for me to get orders from Rome, do this or do that. Somebody's got to do the work. And let me be very clear. Somebody's got to do the work. Otherwise, I'll pray for you. I'd recommend becoming Vatican Nation very contemplative catechists. There's work to be done. Okay? So that's the Eucharistic Crusade. Now the third is the report. Now may I just ask whoever is here, Marian, thanks for giving us this. This is very useful. Now, could you, in a few sentences, give us your own, you might say, impressions from working? You worked with Bill Butler, didn't you? Who else was there? Bill?
Bill.
Is Bill there, too? Oh. So, well, look, you probably have the loudest voice, Bill. Pardon me. Would you tell us what happened?
And speakers, and they really hit hard on chastity, abortion, and dedicating your life to Jesus. We had a table set up, and several people came from the Ignatian and Marian Catechist group. We had books. We had people there who could talk to the children or to the students and to the adults who were there. We had several adults that showed an interest in teaching children more about the faith and also wanted to learn more about the faith themselves. And we had quite a few young people who came up and expressed an interest in learning more about the faith. I talked to Bill Butler briefly several times. He was very busy throughout this whole procedure. He is going to send us a list of all of the people that attended the conference, and he's very happy that we were there and wants us to come to, or at least wants someone to come to all the other Say Yes to Jesus rallies that he's holding throughout the country. The next one is in April the 23rd in
Buffalo, Minnesota.
Bill was very happy we were there, and everyone was very busy. A lot of people asked questions and showed a real interest in learning more about their faith.
Well, when Bill first started, he came to Detroit. Came from Tulsa to Detroit. Then he came again to Chicago. Then he invited me to Tulsa, which I was there too. And he called me, by the way, Bill called me twice since the Kalamazoo meeting. He was very grateful for our services, and he does need, and the word is need, not just our ideas, but somehow assisting him in the follow-up.
Right.
Because I kept hearing him, Bill, you can, it's wonderful what he does with those rallies, but there must be a backup, a follow-up, in terms of training, educating. This will take some organizational skill. Now, am I correct, Bill? Now, with you and Marian, will you somehow, if I can assign people to a job, would you work with Bill Butler?
Yes.
Marian?
She said yes.
And then, but you'll need help with that, too, because the more names they send in, you see, and this is, the potential is just breathtaking. Do you tell you how many cities already have these rallies?
He didn't say how many have already had them, but he has, for this coming year, for the next 12 months, at least 12 rallies already organized. So there are 12 of them, 10 to 12 rallies within the next year.
So that, at any rate, it's a great potential, and I must say, when I first met Bill, I assured him that we would help.
Right.
So at least I did make a commitment.
Father, there were about 300 to 400 students at this rally, and Bill Butler said, he kind of apologized. He said, the next one will be a lot bigger. So this was a relatively small rally, I guess, compared to some of them.
And the bishop was there too, wasn't he?
The bishop was there. He celebrated Mass. And there was also about 15 minutes of Eucharistic adoration before Mass.
And these are the things, Marianne.
The Blessed Sacrament was exposed in the chapel all during the rally, in a chapel farther in the school. And there were two young priests from the area that were available all day for confession. One more Catholic.
Right.
Yep.
One more. And he's the religious, what was his title?
Huh?
The one that wore the cassock was the person, one of the people responsible for finding vocations in the diocese.
Exactly.
And I saw him talking personally to several young people.
And they're young. They've only been ordained a few years.
Right.
This has potential in all directions, you see. So, thank you. And that's number... Thank you, Bill. That's number... Three. Number four, prayers for Peter. Marianne asked all of you to please keep Peter basically in your prayers. Then the two talks. Number one, you want to say just a word, Lewis, about your program at Mount Maria Mount Carmel?
Yes, Father. We've been having classes in the catechism in September. We're presently in our seventh month. And we've asked Father to come to our parish to give a focus, to give direction, and they call it to action for the laity to promote the catechism, and by promoting the catechism to achieve the moral reconversion and re-evangelization of the United States and of course of the world. And the focus then would be, well, we have many different peoples from many different apostolates come to our church. It includes the people in a very wide spectrum of Catholic apostolates, the pro-life.
I was only, for example, somebody could follow up on and inform us afterwards. This, by the way, over the years, is just good, you might say, apostolic policy. When people attend any meeting or lecture, try to get their names, addresses, and phone numbers, and both give them something, whatever it is, maybe just a holy card or some kind of a memo. And then also have them somehow commit themselves, if they wish, to some follow-up. Would that be possible to us?
Yes, Father. When we find it,
give us some thought, would you?
Yes.
Okay. Then the course on evangelization. As people may know, at the university, we have what they call a Romero Center. Though you made retreats there, you know, the upper third floor Romero Center, which is organized by our people. How about itself for retreats, weekend meetings, seminars, whatnot? Some of you may have met Marcia Knight, the lady kind of chaperoning the program. Marcia Knight, that's K-N-I-G-H-T. She wrote a manuscript which she's never published. I talked to her this evening, told her I would say something tonight. Marcia has a master's degree in theology, and she wrote, I would say, a manuscript which is just, you might say, an off-print, is not published, on evangelization. And for 7 years, she told me, she had this organized and done SCOTUS. And it's to interest people, well, some along our lines, to teach them the faith, encourage them to pray, and then motivate them to evangelize, to spread the faith. I don't know that much about Marcia's background or, you know, how how knowledgeable she is of, say, Catholic doctrine. All I know is she's a very dedicated person. And she works on salary. She works for the Jesuits there, you know, almost 7 days a week. Even when retreats are held, she's there in the office. In any case, what I'd like to do is, I got only one copy. She said I could keep the one copy I've got. And if somebody would volunteer, or maybe I could volunteer for them, to read the program she has. It's been used for about 10 years already. But she's a committed person, dedicated, intelligent. And I think she's Orthodox. But let me tell you, a lot of heterodoxy today is ignorance. You know that? The most heterodoxy in the church today is ignorance. Helps me a lot in dealing with people. I just don't know. In any case, she's a very good person. Not married. I don't think she plans to marry. But she's a lay woman. So I thought I'd just mention that, because here's a person that I see. Sometimes she's sitting across from me at table, because she eats one meal a day with the Jesuits. So that's the course in evangelization. And it would be well to find out, and she may know also, whether similar programs are in operation in the country. Because the idea is a wonderful one, obviously. It all depends on who's in charge, how they're doing it. And the one big advantage we've got, that we're working with Rome, see? And maybe something could be done to know who these people are, maybe have an international meeting of such, the evangelizers, and, well, help them. Over the years, I've done this in various enterprises. Then, secretary, we've got that. By the way, could you be secretary also next week? Pardon me. I try to take it easy, just 1 week at a time. Then, regarding Carlos Sanchez, there are three pages. First of all, one page, pass that around, please. And page two, pass that around, please. And page three, pass this around. There are four pages, but the fourth page is not significant. This is a lost copy of this program. Over the years, when the Holy See has told me to organize, this has been, only God knows, how successful. I think it has been the most significant organization. Our annual budget now is $500,000, and everybody belonging to the Institute is dedicated. Transportation, they pay themselves, and the only paid personnel are the two offices that we've got. One in Chicago and one in Ann Arbor. Father Downey is in charge of the Ann Arbor office. Father Dutty Day in charge of the Chicago office. Now, you notice the list of speakers. You notice the title. The Catholic Catechism, A Gift to the Church. That's what this annual convention is about. I don't believe it's identified, except that the Apostolic Delegate or Ponuncio is getting an annual award. Each year, the Institute gives an annual award. This year, it is Archbishop Cacciavillan, the Ponuncio. Now, the Cardinal will be there on Friday. And at least, I'd say he would almost certainly stay through Saturday. Now there's a he's not listed here, but there's a dinner, kind of a banquet, usually on Saturday nights. Yeah, banquet, yeah, 6:30. And Father Fess, he was giving the address. So I would say for certain Carlos Sanchez will stay on Friday through Friday and Saturday. You'll be meeting with him, the number of people coming in from the east to meet with Carlos Sanchez, and by next week, if you could let me know by next week, if you could come. Now there, you probably saw the cost, you know, what they charge for the somehow, I think those are single occupancy, 180 per person. Is that possible?
It's for the weekend. It's for 3 days.
Oh, it's 3 days. Oh, that's everything. I guess that's not, it's not too bad, is it?
No. Registration, room, and meals. That's not bad.
So, at any rate, now, for yourselves, and this, you can even put it in writing, you would be my guest and no charge for the meeting, in other words. If you come, if you do come to Chicago, now, of course, for lodging, then I'd be, well, I would even bum some kind of a, I'm too much involved in this, so I'd almost say I'd even pick up the tab or have somebody from Chicago give you a night's lodging if necessary. Now, I'd like to say that there's no charge for you people, okay? If you can make it for Carlos Sanchez. Now, as you may know, Carlos Sanchez is coming again to the States in June. And I want to be clear, Carlos Sanchez is coming. One of the main reasons is us. It may surprise you. He is looking forward to and expecting the kind of backing that we can give the Holy See for the Catechism of the Catholic Church. You may have seen the black book, DOA. Have you seen it? And it's not as hard-hitting as it could be. Somebody just gave me, who was it? Lewis, was it you who gave me a copy? Somebody gave me a copy.
Richard.
Please?
Richard Wittorowski.
Somebody else gave me today a...
that was a pamphlet, Father.
That was by the Redemption. By the Redemptorists?
Yes, Father.
Did you give me that?
Yes, Father.
And yes, this one is not in black. This is in kind of a bright orange. But it is devastating. Undercuts everything the Catechism stands for. Everything. In other words, the Philistines, as we must call them, are not asleep. They're very busy. And almost every paragraph undercutting the Catechism, and the Holy See knows that. So that, and just to, in other words, all the pious talk in the world will not solve the problem unless we somehow we do the equivalent in terms of zeal and hard work and all the rest in promoting the Catechism. I want to be as clear as I can. Holy See does depend. You may not think of yourselves in that capacity. Well, let me tell you, when I first began working for the Vatican, I didn't think of myself in that capacity either. But Rome depends, and I mean depends, on dedicated, intelligent, hardworking cooperators. And we're looking for no recompense financially in return. Quite the contrary. Okay? Savannah Shanti is going to be in Louisville, Kentucky in June. And I think it's the first. I'd have to check my schedule. But it's in June. It's in my black bag, which I think I left downstairs. Would you pick it up? Inside, Margaret? Inside, there should be the number 94 agenda book, please. And so without any further ado, if you can make it to Chicago, and of course we'll let you know just when, I'll be in contact with the Cardinal. He faxed something to me about a week ago, and I owe him a return, contribution. Then, number 11, the Catholic Catechism newsletter. We plan to have the draft of the newsletter ready for Cardinal Sanchez when he comes to Chicago. The first draft. I think I told you that Dan Giroux agreed to edit it, but we do need, I mentioned this I think the last time, we do need input, and it's got to be news, information, hardcore data that is not commonly available. Then, number 12, the library. Now, I think, Kikel, we've talked about this. And the last time you mentioned that you would need some shelving or something like that. Well, let's press the button on that, because Dolores and John are asking me from Washington. Okay. And they're asking about, because they've got 50 cases already, and what they have is the bound periodicals, Kathy periodicals, going all the way back. We have a complete set of the Osobato Romanos bound from the beginning to the present, which we're getting from the Dominican Library in Washington. At any rate, I would like to reach a decision tonight on that library. Now, first of all, is it agreed, Carol, Margaret, and who else? Elena, is it agreed that this would be the place where we will have our Catholic lending library? Is that agreed? Now, you mentioned something about shelving. Now, where would this be? What place in the on the premises here?
Basement.
Place?
Basement.
In the basement. Is it for books? Is it okay for books? I mean, they wouldn't get, you know.
It can't be moist. It has to be.
It's pretty dry in the basement.
Is it dry?
We also have windows that
will. It is. It is dry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And well then.
Excuse me. A lot of these old buildings, that look, the storms, flood, could backflow. I mean, it wouldn't be uncommon to get 2 or 3 feet of water.
I didn't hear what he was saying.
He's saying some of the old buildings could get a backflow or a flood with some storms, but I don't believe they've ever had any flooding or in the basement here.
There's a place you can check
this. Here, what I would suggest, because she's not just, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Mm-hmm. Now, but today I'd like to start the machinery going. So, because some of the O'Connells have stockpiled these cartons in their home already, and then people are waiting in the library where we got these things at Seton Academy. So, if we need shelving, if somebody would be in charge of what it costs, then solicit whatever has to be solicited, whether funding or shelving or whatever has to be done.
Father, and Bob will take care of this.
Are you willing?
Yes, Lord.
Okay. Well, then, are we clear then? And then, now you, in other words, I'll be talking to Carlos tonight. And then, they'll be in contact with you, so we get the machinery going. First of all, what we've got, how much spacing we'll need, the transportation, and then, I would like to see this, and before the summer gets too much underway, have the library going, don't you think?
I'd like to make one recommendation for the observatorial models that you have.
Yes.
There is a new thing out on the market. It's called a scanner that will actually take printed material and put it in on a computer and actually type that material in for you.
In fact, that's what Jeff Mills' outfit does. They do that. Thank you. Thanks for reminding me. See, these things, see, once we have such material, then we can be available to people literally all over the world with the modern machinery for communication. So, is it you two fellows then? Okay. And have you got their names?
Father.
And you got their phone numbers too. Okay. Please.
Don McSween is also a volunteer to help with that.
See that?
Don McSween.
Okay. Okay. And then, in number 13, by the books back into print, and I got a call from AA. Today is Wednesday, Monday, and the most encouraging contact I've had with AA in several years. They're very cooperative. At least they wanted, so the associate editor sounded. In any case, there is a market, a real market, for good copy books that are not in print. Now, Ten, as you know, is doing some of the work. One of the problems with I might put it down here. One of the problems with Ten is that Thomas A. Nelson, hence the name. Nelson, I knew him personally about 12 years ago. We had a long seminar meeting where we couldn't cooperate. And he had resources, money, everything. Except that Nelson, he is not an outright Lefebvreite, but his whole sympathy is in that direction. At least let me put it this way. He has such strong sympathies in that direction. I could not in conscience cooperate with him, both because of my real convictions and because of the harm it could do to whatever my name is worth. At any rate, we do need, and this, seriously think about this, we need a thoroughly sound Vatican thinking 10 publisher. Am I clear? And the money can be got. The resources would be available as a beginning capital. In other words, a publishing company. Now, Intermodifica in Washington is incorporated as a publisher. And we would be willing to help somebody, because they'd have to. It would be a business. And it is financially remunerative. But I say it'll be bringing books back into print, but good sound copy books without having the kind of orientation that Nelson does have. At any rate, I would very much want to, and by next week, give this some serious thought and prayer, would you? And either yourselves or somebody that you know who would be willing, not just academically interested, but willing to become involved. And Newman Press, who was my first publishers in Westminster, Maryland, Eckenrode by name, he was a man who died some years ago. You know, he told me when he started Newman Press, Newman Press. He began with $20 on a typewriter. In 10 years, he became a millionaire. And that's 30 years ago. And what he did was to, he started by becoming an agent for publishers. And just for the record, I know no publisher in the country who gives less than 40% to agents for selling their books. I mean, 40%, 40 cents on a dollar. As an author, I just get 50% discount on my own books. It just shows how publishers depend on agents, you see. Swackenberg began as an agent, and then gradually became a publisher, and one of the major comic publishers in the country. Unfortunately, as I'm sure you know, the Newman Press has such